Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And a good Thursday to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody is warm, safe, and you pack your patience if you have to start up the car today. Just pack it. Pack it and take it with you, because you're going to need it. There's no secret. We're not exactly pros around here when it comes to this stuff and driving around. So people tend to go crazy, kind of like when they make a mad dash to the grocery store, because we've all got that story where we've been locked in our house for a week and a half and we ran out of food and water, right? We all have that story. Hashtag sarcasm. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McKay with you, Elijah Campbell Manning things. It took him forever to get to our Hillside Medical Game studio. So with that being said, let's go to our weather desk and our road desk, our traffic desk. Here's Elijah Campbell.
Update, not good.
How bad is it?
Briley is miserable. I live in Madison. And I get on Briley, get here. Usually takes me 20 minutes to get to the station. Today it took about an hour 45.
Mm. Ooh, so,
yummy.
A whole lot of stoppage. Once I got off the interstate, it still took about 35 minutes to get to where I eventually parked. I did not try the hill here at our Hillside Medical Game Studios. Mm. I actually elected to park across the street at an apartment complex and negotiated with the man at the front desk to let me park there all day. So it's if you don't have to be outside, I don't recommend it. 0 out of 10, not a good time.
0 to 10, you say it's a 1 out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 1 would be a generous estimate.
Well, we are expected to get, I don't know, anywhere from what, 4 to 6 inches? Maybe more?
Something like that.
I mean, it's
well on its way.
I was going to say, it looks like every bit of that right now, quite honestly. Pretty crazy. And it is still coming down in buckets. With that being said, let's go out to our weather desk in Los Angeles. Here's Willie Donick.
Sunny, 50 degrees in Los Angeles. High of 72 today.
Boo.
Yeah, I got a nice jog in. I'm about to tweet it out. I got a nice jog in yesterday to Dodger Stadium. They would not let me on the grounds.
No?
The gate was open. I was there on Vin Scully Drive, and I could see the outskirts of the stadium. You know, it's in the ravine, so it's not like the stadium rises up out of the ground. You know, you can see the light poles. I was like, oh, gate's open. Maybe I'll just kind of jog around, see what, the guy came out of the thing like the Wally World guy. Hey, Mark, can I get the
Mark's
referee,
closed.
Elijah? It sounded just like the referee guy. It was a hey. And he said, we're closed because of COVID. I was like, you know, we're outside.
Right.
There's nobody here. Can you let me jog around the thing? I didn't give the guy a hard time, but I was
hey,
like,
hey, okay. Hey.
Yeah. That was the guy on the bullhorn.
Park's like closed.
Candy. Yeah, park's closed. I was like, jeez, man. There's nobody here. Just like this. I was like, I just want to see the palace, man.
Yeah.
Just want to see it.
You've been there, though, right?
I have. It's awesome.
Yeah, I've been there, too.
You just feel like you're in a time machine back to 1963, 1964, something like that, you know?
Very well, it's 60s. Just, well, if you drive there, it's, you know, you're like, where are we going? What? There's going to be Dodger Stadium here? We're in a neighborhood. Like, where are we? And then, boom. There you go.
Is
Vin Scully Drive, going up the hill? Is that the road you're talking about?
Yep, that's what took me in there.
Yeah.
It's and about 3 miles. Oh. It's only 3 miles from the downtown. We're staying right in downtown LA Live, you know, just a couple blocks from whatever the arena is called. Now the crypto, whatever. And then we're also about 2.5 miles from the LA Coliseum. I went for Dodger Stadium, and unfortunately I wasn't able to actually see it, but I'll tweet out what I did. You know, I'm up against the fence. You can see the light poles in the distance, but it's a cool place. The jog itself is not the prettiest area of LA, I will tell you that.
No, but still.
But it's cool once you get there.
It's cool once you get there. Tonight, the Predators, as you just heard, they're in L.A. It'll be a 9:30 puck drop. 9:30 puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 8:30, and we'll see if the Predators can keep this thing rolling after starting off this road trip with a 3-2 victory over Vegas. So we'll get into that a little bit more. Elliot Friedman will join us at 1 o'clock, but we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. I want to get your take on this whole, because I was reading this yesterday. I was unaware that this guy had said what he had said, and then I just basically got all the aftermath and his basically the I'm sorry column or, you know, story. Hub Arkush, and I believe, by the way, didn't he say these comments on 670 The Score in Chicago where Porth is right now? I believe that's where it happened. I believed it happened on their airwaves.
I'm
pretty sure. Yeah, it was on 670 The Score in Chicago, and he's an MVP voter, and he said he would not vote for Aaron Rodgers because he says, quote, he's the biggest jerk in the league. Now, of course, Aaron Rodgers has also weighed in and said he thinks he's an absolute bum and he doesn't know me. So they're throwing darts at each other. Meanwhile, the Cheeseheads have come out of the woodworks and they absolutely swarmed this guy and tore him from limb to limb, which then prompted him to write the I'm sorry speech. You know, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, because I guess he likes voting.
For the AP? Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. Yeah.
Well, don't you think? I mean, if you're that biased, then you shouldn't vote, honestly.
Well, okay, so that's where I wanted to go with this. I wanted to get your take on this. So what do you think?
I can't just wake up and say, you know, I got a problem with applesauce, so I'm voting for the best applesauce in the country, but I hate applesauce. You know what I mean? It's like you can't – if you're voting, you have to vote for the best players, and you have to be professional about it. And if you're not going to be professional, you can't vote.
Well, okay, so that's – and I – obviously, I'm with you on that. I think, one, do I think Hub Arkush is the first – to be biased towards somebody? No, we all know this is how it
everybody
works.
Everybody has biases that you try
or strong
criticize.
Feelings, right? Or yeah. Strong feelings. But here's his, you know, his downfall. You know where I'm going with this. His biggest mistake is you don't announce it to the world.
Yeah,
that's your biggest mistake, dumb. Like, don't tell everybody. Like, I can't stand Aaron Rodgers. He's a jerk. So I'm not going to vote for him. You may not vote for him, but what you do is you don't make it public that you didn't vote for him because he's a jerk. I mean, you know, because like I said, there are – because you know the story. It's well documented. Willie, when we went to Detroit many, 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 many years ago when it was at the Joe, and we went to the Tigers opening home opener against the Minnesota Twins, and I texted you because you were in the stands with Pete Weber – and I was in the press box with Kevin Ingram, and I was sitting by Jack Morris, and I was like, why isn't anyone talking to this guy? No one wants anything to do with him. Nobody will sit by him. Nobody will talk to him. It's Jack freaking Morris. Oh, yeah, he was a jerk. Everybody hates him. So you know when he played, you don't think people, the voters, you don't think they didn't take that into account? Of course. I mean, I think it's – we've talked about it. It's played into his Hall of Fame ballot. I think Jack Morris is a Hall of Fame pitcher. I don't know about you. I know we've had this conversation. But yeah, I think he is –
He's in.
Yeah, I know, but it took forever, and we all knew why. Right? So we know that goes on, but just don't put it out there for public consumption. Ding dong. I mean, that was his mistake, and then, of course, now he's got to fall on the sword, and I'm so sorry. I've got to be better than that. Yeah, well, you know. Look, you're not it's what we've said before on apologies. Like, really? He's not really sorry. Like, he's not sorry that he thinks Aaron Rodgers is a jerk. He's sorry that he got lambasted by the Packers fan base, right? And then people in his business. You know, people in that business saying, yeah, dude, like, you can't do that. You're a voter. Like, what are you doing? So, you know, he gets crushed from both angles. That's what he's sorry about. He's sorry that he ever said that on 670 The Score. But is he really sorry that he thinks Aaron Rodgers is a jerk and he's not going to vote for him? No, I don't believe he's sorry for that, because that's clearly how he feels. He's sorry that the fallout after it happened. That's what he's sorry about. So I just was curious what side of the fence you were on.
This is not the first time that this has happened. There was a guy, I'm trying to remember. I feel like it was like Pedro Martinez or somebody. And there were two people that left him off the ballot completely. You know, there are some times where, how about this? The one guy that didn't vote for Derek Jeter to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He was unanimous, except for the one guy. Everybody went to the one guy and said, not on the ballot? Like, really? But if the guy makes his case and says, well, this is my case, then that's one thing. But if you go off on this personal thing, I think you should surrender your right to vote, because you're not being professional.
Well, I'm
now,
sure.
If he just said, I didn't vote for Aaron Rodgers as MVP because I think that Jonathan Taylor or XYZ were better. I don't know how many people you vote for. Like, in the baseball MVP voting, for a long time anyway, you voted for like 20 people. You did like the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the votes were kept. And they didn't have some obvious people. You know, in past years, there's somebody who will leave an obvious person off the ballot entirely, and it seems like that was just a personal shot. There was just no way you could make the case that this guy shouldn't be in the top 20. So I don't know enough about the system, but it just that made no sense there. But
well,
when you go off on a personal note there, you should probably surrender your vote.
And I'm sure that
has had some bad run-ins with Aaron Rodgers, and he's not the first person to think that Aaron Rodgers, you know, can be kind of miserable sometimes.
Difficult to deal with, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that what you said was probably in play. He probably got the stern talking of, yeah, you're going to need to fix this or you're not going to be voting anymore. That's probably what prompted that.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. So, all right, we will come back. We're going to learn a little bit about those dogs. National championship game is Monday night. It'll be Georgia and Alabama. Mike Griffith will join us from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He will join us next here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's see what you did there, Elijah. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this snowy Thursday here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you, Elijah Campbell at our Hillside Medical Game Studios. And we are now joined because we're going to talk a little bit about the national championship game that will take place on Monday night, Georgia and Alabama. Mike Griffith is on the line with us, at MikeGriffith32 on Twitter, to be exact, if you want to give him a follow. He covers Georgia for the AGC, SEC Network, Dog Nation. He does it all, and he now joins us. Mike, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys.
How are things in your world?
Busy, right? I mean, we're all getting ready for the rematch, trying to, you know, go over all the potential angles and kind of sort it out, and, you know, at the end of the day, it just, you know, who plays better, right? You know, there's a lot of factors, there's a lot of keys, but, you know, I think it comes down to game planning and execution like every other game, but this one seems particularly close.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Were you surprised? Because a lot of people really had that pegged as the Georgia-Michigan game as the game. Who knows? This thing could get hairy. This thing could be tight. And everybody just assumed the Alabama-Cincinnati game was going to be the, you know, basically the 42-14 snooze fest game. And really, it was Georgia's domination of Michigan that was really the snoozer. Not that Cincinnati was any threat to win, but were you surprised at how lopsided that game was? And it was pretty apparent very early on.
Yeah, a little bit. I was saying to Buddy, I didn't think Michigan could win even if they had the Music City Bowl referee.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was even you could have them refs like that, you still couldn't. But Georgia, you know, it was SEC, right? I mean, it was SEC in the trenches. It was SEC in the speed. It was, you know, it was game planning. I mean, Michigan kind of overshot their talent with their game plan. I think they thought they were going to be able to play power football. And it just, you know, it was a strength-on-strength matchup. And Georgia was the stronger team. And the way you beat Georgia is on the perimeter with your quarterback, and you get into that secondary. And Michigan wasn't able to do that. They weren't able to establish enough of a run game to get any sort of play-action game going. They didn't have the speed on the perimeter. The quarterback wasn't able to buy the time. It was just a really horrible matchup for Michigan, and they got outclassed and outcoached.
Yesterday, we talked on the show about the SEC championship game, and just get your thoughts on it, because obviously Georgia's never going to say it publicly, nor would I expect them to, but we were saying you have to believe. Look, they're still human beings. They're still athletes, and they understand the lay of the land. Georgia knew they were in no matter what. Didn't matter. They were going to be in the college football playoffs. Alabama, on the other side, probably knew a loss. They're out. They're not making it. So much more desperation for them. They knew what they had to do, and Georgia knew that, look, they were in. And we're not saying that Georgia wasn't trying to win. We're not saying that at all. But, look, they just didn't have the same urgency as Alabama. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if we're going to, you know, take a deep dive into the psychology of the game, I mean, I think that absolutely makes sense. And, you know, and I also think that, you know, Georgia had, you know, kind of maybe been lulled to sleep a little bit when you look at their two previous games. They played a couple cream puffs there with Georgia Tech and Charleston Southern. And you know, when you're dominating those teams, you know, it kind of seems kind of easy, right? And meanwhile, Alabama had been slugging it out and just beaten Auburn in a classic overtime game. And I believe their two previous games against SEC teams were determined by a touchdown. So Alabama was familiar with that sense of urgency, as you put it. And they played as a hungrier team, whereas it almost seemed like Georgia, you know, didn't play with that same sort of reckless abandon and desperation that you have when you're in an elimination game.
Obviously, without stating the obvious, I guess is the best way to put it, of giving up, you know, the points that they hadn't been giving up all year, which was just uncharacteristic of that Georgia defense. Other than that, I mean, what do they need to change? You're seeing the same team twice in a month. What needs to change on the other side for this to go Georgia's way?
Well, you need better quarterback play. I mean, you can't throw two picks. You can't throw a pick six. You can't go three and out on back-to-back series when Bryce Young's found a rhythm. I mean, Alabama had four possessions in the second quarter of that game, scored 24 points in the second quarter, and Georgia was going three and out on three and out on offense. And you know, you got to have Stetson Bennett making better decisions with the ball, he can only do so much with his arm. He is who he is. You know, he can either pop that ball over the top or throw those short intermediate passes. He's not going to make those deep outs. He's not going to make those layered throws. That's not who he is. He's not an NFL talent. That's not what he is. But he is a mobile guy. He's crafty with his feet. You know, he's an older guy. He's a fifth-year senior. So he's got some poise, and he's got to do Stetson Bennett things. And to me, in this game, I think he needs to run the ball considerably more because that's why he's in there. That's why he's in there instead of JT Daniels, instead of the NFL guy with the big arm, you know, because he possesses that mobility. And Kirby Smart wants to see a quarterback that will use that mobility. And I think that's why Kirby's all in on Stetson. And I think that's how you beat Alabama, is with a mobile quarterback. I don't think I'm the first person to suggest that.
I believe Georgia's going to win. But if they don't, and I asked this to Paul Feinbaum yesterday who joined us, and I'll ask you the same thing. If they don't, you know, he knows the lay of the land better than us. You know the lay of the land better than us when it comes to that fan base. What's the fallout? for Kirby Smart because they've had an unbelievable year, but you know how this works. SEC fan bases, and Georgia's no exception, ask Mark Richt. You know, they've expected all year to be in this position and to win in this position, and if they don't, what do you think the fallout will be, or will there be a fallout?
Well, ironically, when you guys were calling, I was just getting off the phone with Coach Spurrier. And it reminds me a lot of the troubles that Florida used to give Peyton Manning in Tennessee. Year after year, Peyton Manning in Tennessee had so much talent. And to Phillip's credit and Duvall's credit, you know, they bounced back and they finally broke through. We all thought, and I'm taking everybody back in the Wayback Machine here. I might be dating myself a little bit. But we all thought once Peyton Manning left Tennessee after 1997, we all said, well, there it was. There was Tennessee's chance. Peyton Manning's gone now. And it never going to happen. And what happened the very next year? T. Martin, Al Wilson happened, Jamal Lewis, Travis Henry. More guys emerged. Because of the success Tennessee had under, you know, with Peyton Manning there, they were able to recruit effectively and quietly built a juggernaut. And Tennessee finally had their breakthrough in 1998 after we thought the ship had sailed. I think Georgia, much like that Tennessee team of the 90s, has built a really good foundation, and they're going to lose a lot. They're going to lose a lot of talent off this team. You lose a lot of guys. They're going to have 12 or 13 guys drafted, guys. But they've recruited a lot of talent. They've become a very popular destination. They've improved their facilities. And I think Georgia's here to stay as a contender. Do I think there'll be fallout? Yeah, I do. I think there'll be a lot of second-guessing, especially about the quarterback position. That's nothing new for Kirby to get second-best on his second-guessed on his quarterbacks. But I don't think it's a make-or-break game, you know, and Phillip did have his day against Coach Spurrier, a couple of them, right? He beat him in 98, then he beat him in Spurrier's last game in the Swamp, 2001, as a 17-point dog. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if Kirby doesn't beat Saban this time, he never will. But I will say this, they do have more talent, certainly seasoned and marinated, than Alabama, when you consider Alabama's coming off a season where they lost six first-round draft picks. And Georgia's loaded, so this would seem to be Georgia's best chance to win a national championship, but I never say never.
Talking to Mike Griffith, he covers Georgia for the AJC, and of course, once upon a time, for those of us that go back a while, covered Tennessee for an extensive period back in the day. So, Mike, just an SEC question in general. The league loves to, rightfully so, flex their muscles. You got the two powerhouses in the championship game. Why have the other teams struggled so much in these bowl games?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. And, you know, I think you mentioned the portal. You know, I think that's something you look at, guys leaving. I mean, heck, Texas A&M did their best Vanderbilt impersonation and didn't show up for a game, right? You know, they found out the quarterback was out, so they tested everybody in the building. You know, they didn't want to play without, you know, so I to me, which, you know, I say that in jest, but I say that in disgust as a football purist. I mean, it pisses me off when a team says they can't play football if they got more than 30 or 40 guys. Maybe it's not your best, but you've got an obligation to the game. You've got an obligation to your fan base. You've got an obligation to the players who can play. Those walk-ons that showed up, that worked just as hard as everybody else, and now maybe it's their chance, and you pull the rug out from under them, that's cowardice. And I don't forget when people and teams don't show up, guys. So I'm just going to tell you, you've touched a nerve. You've touched a nerve that I get upset when people don't show up, because what's missing in society, in my little soapbox here, is this society is missing accountability. I just said, you know, the Antonio, you know, Brown, when he got runs off the sideline, and now he wants to be the victim. Okay, all right, so I'm done with the rant. You know how I feel about a lack of accountability, but there is something to be said for what Herb Street said. And even
though I was going to follow up with that, because I was wondering if you felt the same way about that. I feel like in 20 years, Mike, some of these players that have elected not to play in the game to prepare for the draft will regret that decision. That's just how I feel about it. I'm not going to take a strong stance with it, but I do think more of these kids should play in the games.
It's a reflection of our society, and I'm not, you know, we're not going to turn this into some political hour, but we've become a society of victims, and it's okay for people not to show up. We make excuses for people now. We don't hold people accountable. And that's to me, there are certain situations and cases where certainly there needs to be some understanding, but somehow we have glamorized, not being accountable for our actions, right? I mean, it's just what's happened. It's carried into sports, because sports is a microcosm of our society. I mean, and ask, you know, people listening, you guys ask your, the boss says, it's one of those days you don't really have to come in the office if you don't want to. Well, I don't know about you, but I'll be damned if I'm not going in the office if I'm capable, because I've got a responsibility and appreciation for that job and that employer. And I feel fortunate to have opportunities. And I feel like now maybe that's not, you know, our culture shifted a little bit. And now it's become more of a culture of entitlement. And again, I'm not going to go political on you, but I mean, heck, you're handing out money for nothing these days. So anyway, I think that's bled into sports. It's unfortunate, and I think that I think that's reflected when there's no shows. We were appalled at players opting out. You got teams opting out. You got the entire program saying they're going to no show, man. Let's go bigger. The Big Ten tried to cancel the season. It's unbelievable, and it's bled. It's the politics that have bled over into it, and it doesn't mix well with football, right? Because football is a blue collar game, and people that played, especially the people that play football, I bet you if there was a way we could scientifically break down the vote on who agreed with Kirk Herbstreit and who disagreed, I'll bet you the guys that played football would be the ones that would agree and say, "Heck yes, they ought to show up and they shouldn't opt out." Now, today's player, it's a different level of sophistication and a different level of knowledge and information. These guys have agents now, okay? They're not answering to the mom and dad that all they want to do is go play. They're answering to the agent. The agents tell, hey, look, now you can play. You can play, but the school's got a choice to make. If you're going to play, they need to pay you to play. That's where we're at right now. It's not that these guys won't play. I think you just got to pay them to play. I've got my suspicions about certain programs and certain teams, and I think players have been paid to play in some of these bowl games above and beyond what we know and what we're aware of, because I think that's the lay of the land now. I think you get what you pay for now in college football, more so now than ever.
It's pretty crazy. I'm glad that there hasn't been any kind of outbreak that have kept key players out of these playoff games here. But I want to ask you this, Mike, just from, you know, I don't know the roster up and down, but are there any players that Georgia was missing in the SEC championship game for any reason, any key guys that they will have back for this second matchup that you think might affect how things go?
Not really. I mean, Pickens was in quarantine, you know, for a little bit, and he arrived Monday, and I don't know if that affected him getting targets or not. I mean, George and Stetson haven't had the greatest chemistry, you know, certainly nothing like, you know, George and JT did. I mean, a year ago at this time, Georgia just finished the season winning four straight games, and I think Pickens had 23 catches for 370 or 380 yards over the last four games of the season. And you're looking at Georgia like, oh, my gosh, they're going to open this thing up before five wide. JT Daniels, you know, Heisman Trophy contender and SEC Media Days and all that, and here we are. Think how quickly things have changed. Listen, things can change again. I mean, the MVP of this game could be somebody that's not even on our radar. It could be Ladd McConkey. It could be Jaleel Billingsley. There are so many potential breakout performances waiting to happen, because these coaches are playing chess. It's three-dimensional chess. It's going on. You can't see it, but there's adjustments being made. You know, defenses can't cover everything. They got to make decisions on who they're going to prioritize, when they're going to do it, how they're going to do it, where's that break going to be, where's that bus going to be, which team is better prepared. You know, to me, it's a shell game. It's really hard to know who's going to make the final adjustment. Kirby talked about this being a game of momentum, and true enough, in the previous four meetings, Georgia actually led at halftime in three of them. And in this last game, they didn't lead at halftime, but they led 10-0 after the first quarter. So this is definitely a game of adjustment, and as well as execution. But I think these coaches are going to play a big role in determining. I think we got some real heavyweights with O'Brien, Munkin, obviously Kirby, Saban. Throw Muschamp into the mix. You got some great football minds. And there's going to be a lot of games going on, but beyond what we see on the football field. So I know some people look at the matchup and it's a rematch and you're going, oh, it's kind of boring. But I'm fascinated by it, because I think these teams are both dynamic, and I think these coaching staffs are outstanding. And so I think we're going to see some really, really good football on Monday night.
Oh, we can't wait. It's going to be great. Mike, thanks a lot for the perspective. Great stuff. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, look forward to it, guys. Thank you.
All right, Mike Griffith from the AJC. Not shy, and he never has been, going back to when we had him on, I don't know, 15 years ago easily. He does a great job covering the league, knows it very well. When we come back,
you will never listen to a Mike Griffith interview and say, I've got no opinion on what just happened.
Yeah. You won't ever say, hey, he just mailed in that interview. He brings the passion, as Terry Crisp likes to say.
Yep. Always has.
Good stuff.
whether you buy into it or not, whatever
right.
he's saying,
yeah, whether you agree
he's going to bring it.
He's going to have a strong opinion. Yes.
Yep. Yep. No doubt. All right. We will come back on the other side. By the way, Sean Salisbury coming up at 11 o'clock. So we always look forward to that conversation. Talk about this Texans team, and we'll get into a lot of stuff with Sean coming up for hour number two. More of Darren Donnick and Chase next. Talking about the national championship game on Monday. If you're looking for a place to hang, how about 312 Pizza Company in Germantown? Stillman and Company will be doing their show from there from 2 until 6 p.m. And you can go there and enjoy the best pizza in Nashville. It's a great spot to watch the national championship game as well. So 312 Pizza Company, their address is 371 Monroe Street. That'll be on Monday. And go hang out there. Kickoff is set for 7 o'clock. 312 Pizza Company, Nashville's authentic Chicago pizzeria. And who doesn't love deep dish pizza? I know I do. By the way, it is just absolutely, I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure I remember the last time I've seen this much snow in Nashville. This is,
well, probably last year.
Did we get something this big?
Yeah.
Last year?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What was the final count?
I don't remember. I thought it was like four or okay. five. Now there was
well,
there
we're
was
well
ice.
On our
there's
way to
ice.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the ice storms. I know we've had some,
but I mean,
horrific
we had,
ice storms.
We had a pretty good snow last year because now it was obviously easier because more people were working from home. But I remember Elijah, you got stranded here for a couple of days. Ryan got
I slept
stranded
here for about 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, remember we talked about that on the show because finally it got where it was a little bit better that he could at least get to a hotel room and get a shower. But because I remember bringing up there is a shower at the radio station, but I wouldn't trust it.
You can turn it on, but you don't know what's coming out of it.
Yeah. So
not a good feeling.
Well, I remember one time our old PD, Jeremy Benefield, tried to use it, and it was hot for about 20 seconds, and then it became ice cold. And he learned that the hard way. So,
I was just looking at, it was on ESPN. I think it was Get Up, and they had, and it's ESPN, and their FPI, their system,
yeah.
Best chances to win the Super Bowl. Okay, we are going to have our top 10 next hour after Sean Salisbury. Packers are the best. There's really no reason to probably ask.
Spoiler
you guys
alert.
That. You know, yeah, you know. Packers are 21%. Who's number two?
In their ranking, in their percentage or whatever.
Best chance to win the Super Bowl. Packers,
Chiefs.
21%.
Chiefs.
Team two is 15%.
Chiefs.
Willie?
Chiefs, for sure.
For sure. Chiefs are fourth.
Bucks.
Wow.
Nah, no, wait. I take that back. Take that back. Rams.
Yeah, Rams.
Rams are fifth.
Really?
Ooh. Okay. Titans?
Titans are sixth.
No, yeah, they're not going to give them respect.
I love that.
Sixth.
If I'm the Titans, I love that.
I know. I agree. I don't
disagree
with that.
So
keep doubting.
Packers
keep doubting.
One. You said Chiefs were fifth.
Chiefs are four. Rams
four.
Five. Titans six.
So need two.
Is there a
three.
Team that's not in the NFL? Is there a USFL team in there?
Cowboys.
The LA Express. the Cowboys. There's only two, four. There's only seven teams. Cowboys, not on the list.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay,
right,
so was
Bucks,
I wrong?
So the Bucks
was I
are
wrong
in there.
To back off?
The,
on
Bucks,
the Bucks
are in there.
Bucks are third.
And Brady, I'll tell you what, they are hanging in there. They are not a juggernaut right now. They're winning, but it's interesting to watch them. So I guess we're looking at the Bills or the Cardinals?
The Cardinals are not even on the list.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Cardinals aren't exactly inspiring a lot.
How about that? Cowboys, Cardinals, not even on the list. Bills are number two. 15%. Mm. Bills, number two.
Okay.
So Packers.
Patriots are seven.
Okay, that's what I was about to
say. The Patriots are seven.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I know. That's why I brought it up. I was like, huh, you think the Titans are the sixth? You have the sixth best chance of winning the Super Bowl, and the Rams, who they've beaten, the Chiefs, who they've beaten, the Bills, who they've beaten, and the Bucks and Packers, who they haven't played, all have a better chance. Hmm, okay. And Derrick Henry just hit the practice field yesterday. Hmm, okay.
But I think, then, like Willie said, I think that's right where they want to be. I mean, that's fine. They can fly under the radar.
We still have people that don't see their numbers are all skewed because of all of the hardship they've had at different times. So the season stats don't really jump out at you as anything special. But when you consider what they've been through and how the pieces look like they're coming back together, that's when it gets exciting. But I think from afar, people don't see a team that could go on a run like I think a lot of us do here. I know I do. I think that they've got a pathway here. It all starts by getting the bye for sure, but I think beyond that, I love how it's coming together. I'll tell you who sees it. You guys see these little clips that Brian Baldinger puts together?
Oh, yeah.
Where he slows down the film and he kind of breaks down what's happening there. I think what he has hit on is a big reason why I think what you're going to see is their best in the postseason. That, along with just the overall toughness that they've built as a group through all of the fires. Hey, we don't have this guy this week. We're playing without these two guys this week. I just think it just made them tougher and better out of necessity. And they've worked on their weaknesses. And so if they get the big fella back and AJ Brown stays healthy, and Chase, you missed it yesterday, the t-shirt is going to read key catches at key times. Julio Jones in the postseason.
That's your shirt. Nothing crazy.
I don't even know what that means. I've thought about it even more. I don't even know what it means.
No, you'll see.
So you're basically saying, oh, watch, Julio will have a catch.
Basically what he's saying.
He catches at key times.
What does that mean?
He's going to impact the game and be the difference in a victory.
Oh, he's going to get a first down? Postseason. Great. Glad you traded for Julio Jones.
He's going to get a 20-yard first down, and then Willie's going to take his victory.
See, that's what I was thinking about. It's like, really?
No, you'll know it when you see it. I'll let you know.
You'll know when you see it.
This is Willie giving advice to Mahoney on meeting the girl of his dreams. When you know, you know. Just like when Julio makes that big catch, you'll know.
Yeah.
I'll get excited if he just shows up and is available to play.
Chase, this is the example I used. Last year when the game was on the line against the Ravens and they lost the game, they threw a key pass to Khalif Raymond, who was a nice player, a great overachiever, who had his moments, but because they didn't have Corey Davis, they had to try to fit a tight throw into a tight window, and he was overpowered. I think that is the type of scenario, that's the type of situation that Julio Jones will make a difference for the Titans, to have him over there for a key catch at a key time, pick up a big third down, maybe score a big touchdown on third down in the red zone. He's not going to put up huge numbers. I'm being realistic. I'm not saying he's going to have an 8-catch, 100-yard game in a playoff game. But he's going to have some key catches at key times.
Like I've always said about you, Willie Donick, I wish you were my teacher in school, man. You are the most forgiving. You make things as easy as possible. Your expectations, your bar is so incredibly low. Like, Julio, man, if you could just show up and maybe make a catch – wow.
Okay.
No, so, I didn't say a catch. The people that are listening to me, they're on the same wavelength as me. Darren doesn't
really?
Get it. That's okay.
Oh, really?
I don't know if Chase gets it or not. I think Elijah gets it.
Let's make it interesting.
But I just know.
Well, why are you speaking for Elijah?
It's not going to be quantified by catches and yards. It's going to be the situation that it's not Khalif Raymond over there. It's a Hall of Famer.
Fine.
They have a Hall of Famer that I think still has a chance to be a contributor to this team. He's contributed virtually nothing to this point, and they made a bold move to go get him. It's been a disaster to this point, but it would be worth it if he can be a key contributor.
Okay, let's define. You've given one example of a key situation. Let's define key situation. So a game winning touchdown. All right, that's an obvious key situation.
That's an obvious, yeah. Okay. It doesn't. I don't know if it's going to be that.
I asked yesterday. I said, so will he do it, something he hasn't done all year? Extra score a touchdown and Willie's first. Well, I'm not saying he's. I'm not saying that. And it's like,
right.
Well, what?
Right, right,
what
right.
are you saying?
But I want to define something specific.
Like I want you. Like to me, would you come with this about Julio Jones? Like tell us he's going to win them a game. Tell us he's going to have. Something spectacular, like you're so broad with
spectacular.
He's going to do something to help them.
Well,
great.
We got to come up with the definition of what a key situation is because I'm willing to make this interesting. Like I'm willing
he's
to put
making,
lunch
I
on
never
line.
Used the word.
He's making $14 million this year, and they traded for him.
I don't
and gave
care.
Up assets for him. Like look, I want to. My bar's a little higher than hey, he may show up and do something.
Right, and that's your opinion. That's fine. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing anybody can do, there's nothing Julio can do about what's happened to this point. It's been a disaster for the most part. You think Julio Jones wakes up every day and is happy how this has gone?
I have
no
idea.
But there's
what
a
Julio
huge,
Jones thinks.
There is a huge part. The real season is just beginning here. Big, big games are happening. So, Chase, I can't put a definition. I am saying spectacular is not the word.
Well, at this point, I'm just looking at him.
Performance is not the word. I'm talking
something.
About being a key contributor, a complementary piece that balances off the offense.
But
now,
okay.
Derrick Henry, for them to win this, I predicted them to win the Super Bowl before the season started. I'm sticking to that. Derrick Henry is going to be the centerpiece. I'm not saying Derrick Henry is going to just be a complementary piece. He's going to have to lead the way. A.J. Brown's going to lead the way. But I think Julio Jones can give them a little bit more than what he's given them. And I think how I define that is he can be the guy that balances the defense, gets a key catch here and there, picks up a couple third downs at key times, maybe scores a key touchdown. Just be a contributor. Be an upgrade from all of the guys, the musical chairs that they have run in and out of that position. If he could just stabilize that and make a – and be an upgrade over Khalif Raymond or Cam Batson or all these guys that the overachievers that
well,
they've thrown in there.
He's already an upgrade guys. Over them just based on his name and his career.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
just being on the field.
That
he's an upgrade because he's Julio.
That.
Yeah.
Right. But what I'm trying to say is because you're basically saying if you take Derrick Henry out of the equation, you take A.J. Brown because, listen, A.J. Brown needs to be a part of this too because it's time for him to do some of these things that he's done in the regular season in the playoffs. Like I'm ready to see those key moments at A.J. Brown when it really counts in January. That's another part. But you take them out, and Tannehill's got to make the big throw at the end of the game and to win or to seal it, whatever. That's how I look at a key moment. That's either a game-winning touchdown or a first down that basically seals it, that he's got to make the big catch. Right now, I don't see him going to two because what's that done all year? So that's what you're asking him to do, and I – okay.
Is key it, catches at key times. That's the T-shirt.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but okay. I guess you'll take a victory lap if he does anything. I don't know what that means.
Key I'll give it if he does that.
I want
I'll
you
give
to be specific. I want you to come out and say something. But if you're going to go there, then say something that's got some meat on it. Right now, I just see a bone sitting on a plate. I mean, come on.
You don't see it.
A guy with zero touchdowns and he averages a catch and a half a game this season and 23 yards a game or 23 and a half for me to be specific. And you come with he's going to give a key moment or have a key catch. What does that mean?
It might only be one catch,
so
but it would be an impactful catch.
So you traded for Julio Jones on a 3rd and 3 to catch a 4-yard pass to keep the
You're missing
moving.
The point. You're missing the point. I didn't trade for Julio Jones for that, but this is what I got left. This is all I have looking forward, and that's what I'm looking for from Julio Jones from here till the end of the
Why
season.
Why not ask not this has, question,
doesn't have to do
Willie.
With how many million dollars he makes.
Why not?
Or how
though?
Many catches he had this year?
It because has everything to do.
Well, it has everything. I can't
do anything
can't.
About what's happened to this point.
Why can't I
do anything
I ask
about
you this.
What has happened up until?
Why can't
point.
You expect Julio Jones now? Why don't you come with this stance? Okay, it hasn't worked out. It's been a disaster to this point. He hasn't been worth it. That we all can agree on that.
That's what
it's,
I said.
It's right.
I
how about moving forward now that the chips really matter? Moving forward now where it really counts. Then how about then you make up for the others, the regular season
because
where you
physically
didn't
not
do
that
anything
player.
And you do something.
He's
like rather than
not
just say,
player.
Hey, show up and hey, maybe make a key catch.
Because
like, how about
I'm
you take over
realistic.
A game? How about you do
no,
something big?
He's not that player, Darren. He does not have that same talent right now. His hamstring has compromised him. He's not the same player. But he can still help them. That's where I'm being that's called being realistic. He's not going to all of a sudden turn back into this Julio Jones from 3-4 years ago. It's not going to happen.
Well, I'm not even saying that. But you could at least tell me he's going to have a touchdown, something he hasn't done all year.
No, I don't know if he's going to have a touchdown or not. But he could catch the ball down to the 1-yard line, and then Derrick Henry runs it in from the 1-yard line. I'm saying he could make key catches at key times.
Is it a 35-yard catch down to the 1? Then that's going to be a great play.
Okay, yeah.
Tell me that.
Well, we'll talk about it the day after their first playoff game, and we will reassess this.
Make a definitive statement that he's going to do one of these things in the playoffs. Call it. Just say, like, he's going to score a touchdown.
Like, you want to leave it a mystery and then tell us when you see it. Like, see? That's what I was talking about, guys. It's like, okay. That's okay. All right. Like,
go see Nate's tweet because it's spot on.
The Monday after the first playoff game, we will assess, and we can decide, did he make an impact on the game? Was it key catch? Were there key catches at key times? The answer might be, heck no, not this week. And I'm not saying he's going to do it in every playoff game. He might not be there at all, but there could be – he could make a difference in a big game, more so than Chester Rogers, Nate Westbrook-Ikhina, Cam Batson, Racy McMath, all the guys they've tried to squeeze blood out of the turnip from who are overachieving replacement-level guys who I love. Those guys are great. They're a great part of the story. But for them to win the Super Bowl, they need a couple of key catches from Julio Jones to balance the field and make this offense hum the way we think it can, the way we envisioned before the season goes on. It's not going to be what they hoped it would be. The 79 catches for 1,200 yards. Hey, look at this. They can't cover everybody. It's not that. He's not going to be that player. But he could still help them.
So you don't
That's
think
my they, prediction.
You don't
That's
think those prediction. Other guys can make a key catch?
They might.
You don't think Chester Rogers could make a key catch?
No, he
in
can.
A big game?
He can.
Okay.
Yeah, he can.
Then why is he then what sets Julio Jones any different than those guys?
Julio
those
Jones
guys,
is a Hall of Famer.
What no. Yeah, in the past, yes. His body of work in the past says he's going to be a Hall of Famer, right? Not here, not because of here. But I'm saying what sets him apart? If you just said those guys can make key catches too, then what sets Julio Jones apart? If those guys can make a key catch and Julio Jones is going to make a key catch, then what do you have Julio Jones for if everybody could do the same thing?
Well, let's see how it works. Let's see how it goes, and we'll talk about it the day after the game. And when people will say
easy.
Willie is
that's
right
easy to do.
Or Willie is wrong.
The hindsight.
Did he make an impact?
All right. We'll talk about it after it happens. Okay. We'll come back. Sean Salisbury to kick off hour number 2. We do that next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.